I'm Neil McEvoy. I'm now leader of the Welsh Nation Party, the WNP, in Wales. I am a member of the Senedd, the Welsh Parliament for South Wales Central. I've always been interested in politics, really. Margaret Thatcher, bless her, got me into politics because I was looking at what she was doing and I didn't agree with anything. So I thought, I've got to do something about this, and decided to get into politics in an organised way. My background was, my dad was a trade unionist, treated very badly by the union, really. He ended up being blacklisted, couldn't work on union sites. The union just were not very helpful then to him personally. And so I had that kind of radical background, really, growing up. We would talk about politics in the house often. I would watch the news. I'd organise votes in the playground in school, you know, what game we were going to play. I was 6 years of age, actually. And became active around about the age of 15. I started reading books again at the age of 15. I read a lot as a child. And then by the time I got to 12, decided that reading wasn't for me. And sort of, it was more important to be not one of the crowd, but playing football and not really... probably being as academic as I could have been.
So whereabouts?
Fairwater. I was brought up in Fairwater, in Pentrebane. I went to school. It's the same area, really. I'm a councillor for the area, and it's Fairwater and Pentrebane. It's a working class estate, council estate. I was brought up in a council house. Mum and Dad were able to buy the house later on, which enabled them to have some independence, really.
Well, it sounds like they're doing exactly what Margaret Thatcher wanted and getting housing out of the public sector and into the private sector.
No, the mistake that I'm very much in favour of home ownership. I'm a sovereignist, and I believe that you will not be free individually unless you own your own home. I'll qualify that by saying I've dealt with enough eviction cases where people have paid rent for 14 years to the council, have fallen on hard times, lost a job, become ill, dealt with bereavement, and they find themselves facing eviction. I've been to court a number of times fighting with people to stop the evictions. There was only one time I was unsuccessful, and that person did pay the rent to the council for 12 years. And only fell into arrears over the last 2 years of her tenancy. And if she'd have had ownership of the house, if she'd have paid a mortgage, she'd have had a lot of equity to fall back on during hard times. And the way that I look at it is that probably one thing that Thatcher did right, in principle, was enabling people to buy their own homes. She did it in a really bad way, because I think she was driven ideologically to destroy the public sector. So she gave away housing far too cheaply. People profiteered on it as well, and the money from the housing receipts stayed ring-fenced and they were not able to be spent. So that generated massive problems, massive issues with housing, and we've not recovered to this day.
Can you tell us about some of your adventures throughout? I'm assuming we're talking about Cardiff here. Well, whereabouts is, for listeners in Bristol, they won't necessarily know where you're talking about.
Oh, of course, sorry, yeah, I didn't think of that. It's in the west of the city, so it's a suburb. If you just go outside, right on the edge of the city, if you go outside of the area, there used to be a lot of green fields. They're being built on, but we're fighting that campaign now. It was a really mixed place to grow up, because there were some private houses. Mainly I was born on the estate part. Lots of, I'd say, social challenges growing up. As a kid, everyone was working. Everyone's parents were working. And then that changed in the 80s. And we saw mass unemployment, poverty, real challenges.
Any of them still surviving? Because most of it was industry in South Wales, wasn't it?
Yeah, a lot of people worked in industry. My dad was a welder, for example, skilled manual worker. A lot of people still works. There were lots of jobs like that in those days, which don't exist now. But I think Wales never recovered from Thatcherism, and when Blair came into office in 97. I was a member of the Labour Party in those days, because I thought the way to change things was through Labour. And I found that we essentially had another Tory government, really. Red Tories, I call them. And nothing really changed. And then we had in Wales the creation of the Welsh Parliament, which I fully supported. And the unfortunate thing for me is that devolution has been hijacked here in Wales by people only interested in getting on the gravy train. And they're essentially Labour politicians and Plaid Cymru politicians who do what Labour tells them. And that led to, I suppose, problems for me when I actually got elected as a Plaid Cymru member of the Senedd.
Okay, so, well, this is, I think, the fascinating thing about you, Neil, is that you've bumped up against the party political system quite a lot. So you've joined parties thinking that you're going to be able to change things, and you've found that actually the party political system has kind of stopped you doing that. Can you just take us through some of those clashes that you've had with the various parties?
Yeah, it's really systematic, I think. You've hit the nail on the head there, because what I really don't like about party politics is the way they systematically weed out individuals of principle, I would say, and maybe individuals that don't fit into the boxes that certain people want to put us into. For example, I'm mixed race, my background is very mixed. My grandfather arrived in Cardiff on a boat from the Yemen. I have brown skin, and I've been involved in a row alleging racism. Actually concrete issues, which are, they're verifiable and quantifiable. So it's not me just saying, oh, I feel like I'm being discriminated against. We can look at the number of questions I've put in. I've put 11.5% of emergency questions in the Welsh Parliament in the last 3 years. Not a single one has made the agenda. There is serious systematic discrimination here, and the usual virtue signalers, allegedly on the left, have not opened their mouths. Leanne Wood, supposedly a huge anti-racist, silence. When she was leader of Plaid, actually, she decided that there was no person of colour in Plaid Cymru suitable to do interviews for the party on television. I made a complaint in 2015 about... No, 2017 it was, about the 2015 election. Everyone that did interviews was white, for example, and I wanted that changed. That's in the minutes of a group meeting. And it didn't change, and I was told afterwards that none of us were appropriate. And yet, these are the very same politicians who, I'd say, actually create racial tension by calling everybody racist, and everyone's a fascist, everyone's a Nazi, and they don't look at the wider picture, they don't look at their own behaviour, they don't look at their own prejudices, because everyone is prejudiced, doesn't matter who you are.
And okay, so how did you go from Labour to Plaid then? What happened?
Is this going to be edited? Yeah, great, because I'm going on a bit. I got elected to the council in 99. Before then, this is going to sound really strange, but it's true. It all started by trouble in the Labour Party. All started when I was 22 years of age. I came back for university, and I was just absolutely appalled at the state of my community. And there's this beautiful park, it's called the Dell. It was awful. I mean, it was overgrown. Nobody could go there. The playground had gone. It was an absolute... It was awful. And I was shocked, and I wanted to do something about it. And I thought that the local Labour councillors would join me and maybe galvanise the community and get involved locally and improve the area.
Well, here's a mission that can bring everyone together.
Yeah, but instead they looked at me. I think they were quite unconfident of themselves because none of them had been to university. And their attitude was, who the hell are you? And when I was 17, delivering thousands of leaflets and not questioning things, I was okay. But as soon as I expressed an opinion, then they found it difficult to accept. And from then on, simply through trying to get a local park cleaned up, essentially, I was sort of part of the awkward squad. And I went for the selection initially for the Welsh Assembly, as it was then in 98, and even though I had a degree, even though I was fluent in three languages, even though part of my degree was politics and economics, I had a track record of being an activist, I set up a credit union in my area to combat the loan sharks, I led a number of environmental campaigns. Despite all that, I wasn't deemed good enough to represent the Labour Party, and I wasn't even allowed to be a candidate. So that was my first, I'd say, taste of first is incorrect. It was another taste of Stalinism, if you like, of being weeded out and not being allowed to go forward. I was selected to be a council candidate, actually, and I remember people complaining that I shouldn't be allowed to be a candidate, which was really, I mean, it was eye-opening at the time. But I think they could see something in me that wouldn't be deterred, and they could see that there was trouble ahead, if you like. I'm not a troublemaker, But I'm a person that wants to see things done properly and just wants to see things done fairly.
Well, you're painting a picture here of rather a cliquey organisation.
Oh, absolutely. I mean, they run Wales and will betide you if you have a different opinion. And basically, what was quite funny as well, I got elected to the council. I wasn't on side with the council leadership because they were performing badly in my view. And in 2001, I was instructed... Was it 2001? Yeah, I think it was. I was instructed by the Labour Party not to support... Now, if there are any Bristol City fans or Bristol Rovers fans out there listening, I mean, I'm a massive Cardiff City fan. I sat in the grandstand from the age of 7 onwards with my dad. And I was told not to support the new stadium because I still don't know why, really. But there's a group of people, they were... didn't really understand football, I'd say, white, very middle-class individuals who looked down on working-class people, and they decided that a new football stadium wasn't a good thing for the city, and that caused a lot of tension. I wouldn't obviously oppose the stadium, it was a ridiculous thing to ask me to do, and it caused me a lot of problems, and then it was decided that they would get rid of me as a councillor. To be honest, if they would have left me alone, I probably would have left, because at that point I'd really had enough of being elected. But then I'm a bit stubborn and I thought, well, do you know what, I'll go when I'm ready and I won't be pushed. So I stood for re-selection and I turned up at the re-selection meeting, and I suppose really the other story here is that I didn't agree with what the Labour Party were doing at all, and with Blairism and so on, and I wasn't too impressed with the Welsh Government in Cardiff Bay in the then Assembly, and I went for re-selection. I turned up at the selection meeting. I'd been really busy in the community, so they only gave me a minute to say what I'd done over the previous few years, and I looked around the room and realised I wasn't actually as popular as I thought I was, because none of my supporters were there, or none of my known supporters. None of the Bangladeshi community were there. I had a lot of support there, a lot of support from the Pakistani community. They weren't there either. And I felt pretty let down, to be honest. So I went, did the selection, tied, the vote was tied. Nobody won. And that upset a lot of people. And I got home sort of depressed, because clearly people didn't feel they wanted to support me and turn up. And I turned my phone on. I just had message after message from people who were not allowed into the meeting. They wouldn't let him into the meeting. So I'm like, oh my God. So the reality is I would have won the re-selection easily. So there was another, that was it. I'll never forget this man. He was the head, David Costas. He was the head of legal in Labour Party Wales. And they tried to cancel the re-selection because it had to be run again. And I phoned him up. I read in the rule book, and this sums up the Labour Party, and later Plaid Cymru, actually. And he said to me, I know the rule says that, Neil, but it doesn't mean that. So the next time around, I thought, right, I'm going to be a bit wise now. I'm going to stay outside the meeting. I'm not going to go in until all my supporters are allowed in. And coincidentally, everyone outside was either black or brown. And because Riverside, where I was a councillor, is the most... probably the second most diverse ward in Wales. So big different communities, Indian, Pakistani, Bangladeshi, Somali, a real mix, a real melting pot. And so everyone was outside, and it was time to start the meeting. I had to go in and speak, and they wouldn't let any of them in, even though they were all paid up members. And I remember one of the people there, his first name was Mohammed, and I had his Labour Party membership card. I said, look, Mohammed blah blah blah, won't say his surname, he's fully paid up. And they said to me, he may be fully paid up, Neil, but he's not on the list and he's not coming in. And I thought, I said, well, who made the list up? And they said, Labour Party Wales. I'm like, oh my God, okay. So they've stitched it up from the top. I went in, I said what I had to say to the meeting, because I thought, well, I can sort of either break in with everyone and probably get accused of assault or something, walk away with my tail between my legs. But I decided to go in and just tell them what I thought. So I did that. I wasn't re-selected. And I just thought the Labour Party was a joke, actually. And then I was sort of on a political... in the wilderness, really. I didn't know what to do. I was going to pack in politics. Plaid Cymru got in touch with me. And I didn't contact them. They contacted me. I sat down, conversed. Thought it took me 8 months to decide to join them. I decided to join them and just gave it 100%. And I was told that basically all I had to do was try and create some kind of presence in Cardiff, because Plaid Cymru didn't really exist in the city then politically. And the mantra was, I was told, was Plaid Cymru good, Labour bad. So I found the freedom of revelation. I got on with it. We won 2 out of 3 council seats in Riverside. I stood for re-election there. I didn't stand in the area where I was from, Fairwater. I stood in the inner city area of Riverside to, I suppose, do a job for the team. I got 2 people elected. I lost out just on the third place, ironically. And they wouldn't give me a recount. That was a message on that night. I mean, it was a close result. They refused to give me a recount. It was a bit of a kerfuffle. But because of the amount of pressure, abuse, I didn't realise leaving the Labour Party was going to be so life-changing in terms of work opportunities, in terms of vandalism to my car on a regular basis. I mean, obscene phone calls to my mother, pretty serious stuff, really. The obscene phone calls started when I was a Labour member, but when I left the Labour Party, things continued. And I'd say escalated. That's when the damage to the car started. It went on for over 10 years, the car damage. There was always a shiny, brand new screw inserted in the driver's side tyre on the back. And whenever I'd take off, it would puncture or puncture at some point later on. And I used to have to check my car quite often.
This is almost like people in Ireland had to look under their car when they leave, you know. That could be extremely dangerous, well, that sort of thing.
I drove to Aberystwyth once. So 70 miles an hour a lot of the way, and my tyre punctured when I was in a 30 mile an hour zone in Aberystwyth, and I shuddered to think what would have happened if the tyre would have blown up with the screw. It was the same new screw, same kind of new, it was a new screw again, so it wasn't when I picked up off the road, and I shuddered to think what would happen then. And yeah, it was dangerous. And
I mean, this is really a, you know, potentially a attempt to kill you. It is the sort of thing which is, you know, whoever's doing it is thinking this is low-level harassment, but it could have fatal consequences, potentially.
It was low-level harassment because we were successful. In 2008, I organised the Plaid Cymru campaign in Cardiff. I actually organised Caerphilly as well, and Plaid Cymru took control of Caerphilly Council.
Is that normal in Wales, though, that, you know, politicians will get targeted in that way? I mean, and did the police take an interest in that sort of thing?
They did, but it's difficult because there was no evidence of who was doing what. I think I know who was behind it. I suppose, really, when I got elected, in 2008, I organised the campaign. 3 of us got elected in Fairwater. 7 of us in the city got elected for the first time ever, all in the Cardiff West constituency. And for the first time, Labour were second in Cardiff West. They only had 6 councillors, we had 7. And I think the Conservatives had a couple. And things had changed. And we were then a threat. I became deputy leader of the city. I then had to go through seeing my sister be harassed. And nothing was done about it, really. That went on for years, made her really unwell, because it was pretty... It made me realise how inadequate stalking law legislation is, because there was nothing really that could be done. And my sister had to, when we were no longer in control of the council, my sister had to go to, because she was a councillor as well, she had to go to a council meeting, and every single month the person who was harassing her would walk near her, look at her, be greeted by Labour councillors. He would sit immediately above her. He'd lean over the public gallery to make sure she knew that he was looking at her. And nothing was done. Nothing was done about it. I had no support.
I mean, did you at this point feel, well, actually, maybe I should just step away from politics for the sake of the people around me?
It's not in our family's DNA, to be honest. We don't give up like that. We don't give in to intimidation. If you intimidate me, I'll attempt to intimidate you back. If you throw something at me, I'll throw something back at you. If you attack me, I'll attack you back. That's the way I was brought up, I suppose. Being brought up in a council estate, most people recognise being brought up in that environment. It's slightly different now, obviously, because if I lose my temper, it's a sign of weakness. So I've learned not to do that now, belatedly. It took me till I was about 48. I'm now 50. And It was tough, but the bonus is that we radically altered our community. Antisocial behaviour dropped like a stone. I mean, I'm really proud of what we've done. We got playgrounds put in, the park was cleaned up, we formed an environmental group to keep the park clean, it's still going, and we did a lot, and I'm very proud of my record as deputy leader. What was really weird, though, was that the tension of me being successful and creating, for the first time, a Plaid Cymru in Cardiff. We called it Cardiff Plaid, actually. On the ballot paper, it was Cardiff Plaid, not Plaid Cymru, which upset some people, but it worked. Because for me, it's about localism, it's about decentralisation, and I suppose really the Plaid Cymru brand was pretty toxic, and we did want a bit of distance from it.
But more recently, you've split with Plaid as well, haven't you? Again, so what happened there?
Yeah, well, when I was deputy leader, there was tension. I'll give you an example. We had an economic policy. It was my idea, my policy. And it was called the Capital Cardiff Fund, whereby instead of giving grants out to businesses, we had a little dragon's den approach, and we got investors together. They invested in companies. The council took a small percentage of the shares instead of just giving the grant for nothing. Small, 2 or 3%. The council actually made a profit on it in the long term. And Plaid Cymru adopted that as a policy at the election. And I wasn't even invited to speak about my policy and how it had worked in Cardiff. I could have brought businesses along with me, and there was always this tension. I didn't fit in ever, if I'm honest, because I was not Welsh speaking naturally. I did learn Welsh, but because I learned it, that wasn't good enough for some people. Working class, that didn't go down well either. And I think not being white, that was another issue, if I'm being frank. In that order, not Welsh speaking, working class, and being brown. So I didn't fit in. When I got elected to the Senedd, essentially, because I'd been a deputy leader of the city, lived in Cardiff most of my life, know a lot of people, whistleblowers would gravitate towards me, tell me what was going on. I suppose, outed a few scandals, and that got me in trouble with Plaid Cymru. Now, for those people listening, Plaid Cymru, the Party of Wales, it's not really, but they call themselves that, they're the opposition. So you would have thought that if I'm unveiling scandals, that I'm going to get praise for that, and the Plaid Cymru would have been happy with that. But actually, Tony, the reality was completely different. And I was called in by the leader several times, told to be more respectful to the First Minister. Now, out there, the party membership loved it, the public loved it. I was putting the First Minister on the spot, making him look, I suppose, I was holding him to account, let's put it that way. If I'm honest, I choose not to go drinking with politicians per se, really. I avoid drinking with people in the opposition. I avoid most receptions. The last reception I went to was an ITV reception. I had a couple of glasses of wine there over about 18 months ago, because I saw it as part of my job to meet journalists and discuss things. But most of the other receptions where there's canapes and free drinks, I avoid, and it doesn't interest me. What really got me in trouble was bumping up against the lobbying firm Derrin, whose senior director, half owner, was a Plaid Cymru politician in the assembly, and was vice chair of Plaid Cymru, and they've been naughty, let's say, they may have not been naughty, but Ofcom, the organisation, was naughty in giving them a contract for which nobody else could apply. And there were also issues with two of Derrin's directors also being directors of Ofcom Wales. So there was a clear conflict of interest. And I was told by Plaid Cymru to drop it, to look the other way, to leave it alone. And I refuse to do that, because if a whistleblower has come to me, how on earth can I turn around and say, oh, well, because it's a Plaid Cymru person, I'm not doing anything about it? I couldn't get up and... My mantra in politics is, as long as I can get up in the morning and look in the mirror and be okay with what I see, other than the physical decline over the years in terms of principle, then that's my guiding light of how I do politics. And I couldn't have been able to look at myself, really. And I was told that I had a career in front of me here, 20 years in the Senedd. I could put my feet up, get re-elected time after time, good pension, good money, if I just wound my neck in, really. And I refused to do that. And ultimately, there are a few other things as well. There was a wood scandal, Natural Resources Wales, £38 million contract. The company that got the contract didn't apply for it. I was doing a bit of due diligence on that. That went down very badly with Plaid Cymru. amazingly, but that's true. I've got the subject access request to prove that as well, where I was being criticised very seriously by colleagues. They were briefing the BBC saying that I was always on attack mode, therefore they couldn't stand me. Well, as an opposition politician, that is my job, to be on attack mode against the government. You know, if the government are doing good things, I'll acknowledge that. They tend not to do much good at all, so I'm on permanent attack mode. And ultimately, a load of complaints were made about me in 2017. They were all, most of them were organised by the lobbying firm. There was a bit of a clue in one of the letters, because it said to the chair of the party, "Dear Alan, Nerys Evans told me to write to you." Now, Nerys Evans was the director, and so therefore there was a clear connection there in the letter. And the BBC weren't really interested in BBC Wales, which is a boys' club in Wales, and they're very close to the Labour Party, very close to Plaid Cymru. They weren't interested in a democratically elected politician being undermined by a lobbying firm. And I suppose it was open season on me, really. Really misrepresentative headlines, petitions drawn up to get rid of me, lots of lies told, lots of pressure put on my family. But we were not quitters. So ultimately, I was expelled from Plaid Cymru.
And over what exactly?
I was applauded into a conference by members. And Liam Wood, the leader, thought that was disruptive. I disrupted the conference by being clapped in. And also, I refused to let the chair edit my speech. He told me what I could and couldn't say. As an elected politician, I'm not having an unelected chair, not elected by the public anyway, telling me what I can and cannot say. So I made a reasonable speech, it went down well, and for that I was expelled for 12 months. And I was expelled for a further 6 months because I wrote to all my local members in the party, letting them know what was happening with the complaints, because the BBC were always keeping me up to date, because Plaid were leaking to them. And now the person, the journalist that actually knew everything, he's now a Plaid Cymru member. He was a candidate in the Westminster election last year. And ultimately, I thought I'd serve my time, because I've got a lot of respect for many of the members in Plaid. So I appealed, the sentence was reduced to 12 months. And I went before the disciplinary panel to be reinstated or not. And at this point, I realised the party had lost the plot, really, because one of the elected members of the Welsh Parliament, Plaid members, he was convicted of paedophilia. I never got on with the man. I never got on with him. We didn't get on. I'd observed behaviour which concerned me. I didn't think he was a suitable person to go into schools, for example. And anyway, he was convicted of paedophilia. I was then on a disciplinary for saying that the man should have gone to jail. He didn't go to jail. He's a paedophile. He didn't go to jail. I said publicly that he should have gone to jail. I was speaking as well because there were some members of the party at the time who I knew had been abused in care homes by paedophiles. And me speaking out wasn't just giving my opinion. I was speaking out in solidarity with those poor people who had been abused by paedophiles as children. And I just could not believe that Plaid Cymru, in writing, had me before a disciplinary committee answering as if I'd done something wrong by saying a paedophile should have gone to jail. Unbelievable. Anyway, there was a vote to reinstate me or not. I won the vote. What then happened, because I only won the vote by, it was one, I think it was 5-4. The chair of the meeting then decided to vote, the chair to tie the vote. So I walked away from that, and then I had to go to another disciplinary panel again, and the panel was hand-picked. Only certain people had been invited to go on the panel. They were all hostile to me. Some of them were on record as being hostile.
Well, how's it going with this new party? Because you're sitting there in the wilderness as a sort of backbencher without a party, but you decided to actually start one.
Yeah. It's going really well, actually. What we are, we're the Welsh Nation Party. We were... God, this is another story. And it's really, it's the nature of the lack of democracy in the UK now, because we applied to be the Welsh National Party in December 2019. On the 16th of January, we were ratified, registered as the Welsh National Party, the WNP, and Plaid Cymru complained. Their complaint was not successful. Then in March, unbeknown to us, they threatened judicial review, and immediately the Electoral Commission caved in and withdrew our registration without even consulting with us. So we were a party with no name. We're still a party with no name. We still call ourselves the WNP. It went on and on and on, and on the 28th of September, we were told that we'd have a decision whether or not we could call ourselves that or not, and they told us they would not be able to give us a timeline on making a decision. So we're heading towards elections. We didn't have a name. And what we've done very, very recently is we've withdrawn the application to call ourselves the Welsh National Party, and we've resubmitted an application as the Welsh Nation Party. And the reason for that is there can be no confusion between us and Plaid Cymru's historic name in the 1930s. Nobody's been called the Welsh Nation Party before. And we also think, having spoken to people, that it's more inclusive, and it represents the kind of party that we are. We're a very mixed party, all kinds of people, all kinds of backgrounds. We welcomed the first black Welsh world boxing champion, Steve Robinson. He's joined us. He's a great recruit for us. Our first regional chair just happens to have an Asian background, but he was elected. The chair of the party is female. We have no quotas. We don't believe in that, but what we have is a very open culture, a very respectful culture within the party, and the upshot of that is we're very diverse.
What about the danger that you might fall into is becoming actually quite insular, right-wing, neo-Nazi, like the British National Party did?
Well, I think
nationalism is potentially quite a dangerous idea, isn't it?
Every party is nationalist. The Conservatives are UK nationalists. The Labour Party are UK nationalists, in Wales especially, because they do the bidding of London. I'm essentially a person who lives in Wales. Wales is my country. And I want to live in a democracy. I want to be able to make our own laws on everything, actually. And I don't see why I should have very privileged people educated in Eton and Oxford telling me and my family how to live our lives in our country. And my dad's from England, so I don't call myself a nationalist. I'm just a normalist, really. I'm a normal guy that just wants to make my own decisions on my own life. And our party is we don't call ourselves a nationalist party, but a sovereignist party. We believe in individual sovereignty, empowering individuals to have equality of opportunity over their own lives, giving people the opportunity to make something of themselves. Communities, we believe in community sovereignty. So, for example, if a corporation wants to dump an incinerator in the middle of your estate, as is happening in Wales, then the community should have a vote on it. If the community doesn't want it, it doesn't happen. We have development plans where corporations are making billions in Cardiff, for example, and it's not millions, it's actually billions, and the population is completely disenfranchised. 50 odd councillors vote, most of them don't even read the development plan. And we're left with the end result. So what we're saying is, if there are major things which affect local communities, those communities have to have a vote on them. It works in Switzerland, why not work in Wales?
So it's absolutely crucial that whistleblowers have somewhere to go. For many of them, they find that the mass media, there's nowhere really. They're not interested in these kinds of cases. They'll listen to you, but they won't broadcast the information. We had that with the victims of Jimmy Savile, for example. So can you just tell us about some of the more recent whistleblowers that have come to you? Just give us an idea of the sorts of things that which people are blowing the whistle about, that they're finding that there's really nowhere to run except somebody like you.
God, there's been loads over the years. My golden rule is that a whistleblower can come to me, they can tell me what they like, and I will not publicise it unless they want me to. I think that's one of my rules. Unless it's criminal, of course, and I'm obliged to do something that way. But probably the most recent one is Velindra Hospital, which I've taken a lot of a lot of fire over, because people are lying, so I'm opposing a new cancer hospital in Cardiff. I'm not. But the model, doctors have come to me saying that the model is flawed, there are no emergency beds, there's no surgical provision, so the latest treatments will not be available in the new hospital. It's used to be called the PFI, Private Finance Initiative. They're calling it the Mutual Investment Model now, and it's basically the same. The public sector pays four times as much, and they will not own the hospital at the end of it. So doctors, frightened for their careers, experts in cancer have come to me and laid out their clinical concerns. So I've spoken up on that matter recently. I've asked questions. None of the questions have been answered yet. So that's one, which is that's a major one, that is, because I want the best cancer hospital possible in this city to serve South Wales. And I also want it in the right place. At the moment, it's going to go on a greenfield site, which is, it just doesn't make sense when there's a brownfield site right next door, which they want to sell. So I'm asking who they're going to sell it to and so on. There are lots of questions. So that's one. Some are quite amusing, but actually scandalous. There was a contract drawn up. Again, this is where, let's get through to the real detail here. The contract was debated on the floor of the Senedd, and ultimately, supposedly for energy conservation, companies were in a position where if you fit a light bulb, you're getting £240 for it. And I think the technical term is for reducing water flow, I think that was £125, and you were talking, people would actually having contracts go into, it didn't matter where it was, it wasn't targeted on, for example, low income families, it could be anywhere, they'd go in, the baseline was three, they'd fit three light bulbs generally, put a few of these things in the taps, and they'd walk away with, roughly £400 a house, and maybe £500 a house. It would take literally 10 minutes. So they'd be on to the next house next door. And somebody working in the industry had a conscience because they were actually making money from it. And they just said, this is outrageous. And I blew the whistle on that one. It was called a scaremonger, called a liar as usual. Back in 2010, 11, 12, I blew the whistle on what was going to happen to the green fields in Cardiff when they were going to be built on. I was called a liar. I was said to be misleading the public. The present First Minister called me a scaremonger. And then 3 weeks after, or 3 months after the election, of course, they announced that they were going to build on all the green fields. I've had... there was a bit of a scandal back in 2008. Overtime, going back a bit now. People were not doing overtime, I'm told, and earning £40,000 a year with overtime. If you were in the right union, if you had the right political connections. And so I blew the whistle on that and that put a stop to that. So any overtime now done in Cardiff Council is accounted for. There was actually no accounting for millions of pounds being paid in overtime. So we put a stop to that. Some of the whistleblowing has got me into real trouble with a child alleging abuse in care. That got me suspended from Cardiff Council. I spoke out on behalf of the child. I phoned the care home to see how the child was, and because I upset the person on the other end of the phone, I disputed that I'd spoke aggressively to them. But because I spoke aggressively, any listener would think I'm joking about this, but I'm not actually. They said I upset them. They said I was aggressive. They said they found it intimidating, even though the person who the child said has abused it, and the child has not changed his mind since, and he's made several allegations about the same person. Because a person on the other end of the phone said they felt upset, I was suspended from local government for 4 months. Right?
Can you say whereabouts that care home is?
Swansea. It's outside of Cardiff. And the staff were proven to have lied, okay? Because they said, typical stereotype, I turned up, there was one interaction on the telephone, there was another interaction where I supposedly went to, they said I gate-crashed a meeting. I was invited to a meeting by the parents to speak to a therapist. My background is education. They didn't even know the child had a statement. They didn't even know that. I mean, it was outrageous, the lack of care they had for the child. So I wanted to know a little bit about the therapies. I wanted to ask some questions and use my professional head as a teacher with a background it was called special educational needs in those days when I did my training. So that was my background, as well as being a languages teacher. And I wasn't allowed into the meeting. They cancelled the meeting. The staff there said that I shouted at them. I intimidated them. I called them names. What they didn't know was the father was recording the interaction. So they were proven to have lied. But that didn't matter because the disciplinary panel, chaired by a member of Cardiff University's, a lecturer there, and I think where he works, I'm trying to find this out for definite, it's funded by the government. So there's a tie-up between Welsh Government, I'm a thorn on their side. They have this supposedly impartial chair whose actually his job is financed by the government, I'm told. And they throw me out for 4 months. And in terms of they proved that the recordings proved I wasn't shouting. It proved that I wasn't abusive, as they said I was. They even, one of the accusers admitted to embellishing the evidence. And I'm still found guilty. Because what they said was, because there was no video recording, they couldn't tell whether or not I looked aggressive. And this as well is the institutionalised racism that you find in Wales. Because I'm dark, I have a dark face, I have dark eyes. So therefore, of course, I'm aggressive. And I'm not actually, I'm assertive. When I'm passionate, they say I'm angry. And this, as a person of colour, this is how you get treated by the so-called left-wing woke Welsh establishment. And everyone's a racist, but these very people treat me like that. And well, I find it very ironic.
You're painting a picture of almost the political establishment, the leading ruling party, the Labour Party and the opposition, Plaid Cymru. It's a kind of racket.
I call it the cartel, because Labour has run Wales in government since 1999. They've been helped to do that by Plaid Cymru in coalition, the Liberal Democrats in coalition.
So is Plaid a controlled opposition?
It's not even an opposition. I mean, I believe they've done the deal already for coalition after May 2021. Let me give you an example. This is the first time I was threatened to be expelled from Plaid Cymru. It was a budget deal. And not the one in 2012, which benefited ACT, one of the clients of Derrin. We spoke about them earlier, the former vice chair of Plaid Cymru's company. Not that budget deal, which benefited them. But the budget deal of 2016, I went into a Plaid Cymru meeting, the group meeting, and I wasn't really happy with the deal. And I was told that I had to vote for it and agree it and let the Labour budget go through, because the party had written up a press release and it said it was a unanimous decision. So they did the press release before the meeting, which was typical of Plaid Cymru, because what would shock people is, and especially if any Plaid members are listening to this, we didn't discuss anything that was coming up in the debating chamber in the Senedd. It wasn't discussed. You just had to vote for it. There was no discussion. And that's the way that Leanne Wood ran Plaid Cymru. And I think Adam Price has continued to run it that way. I've never been in any elected group which has behaved that way ever before. Even the Labour Party used to discuss things. The result was already known, but at least you discuss it. Anyway, we're having this discussion about the historic deal between Plaid and Labour, and it was great. And I did my homework, and I'd done my sums. So I said to the leadership, OK, I said, can you just confirm that the deal is 0.71% of the overall Welsh budget? And they looked at me, and they looked at each other, and they said, yes, that's right. I said, OK, good, OK, we've established that. It's zero, so we're talking about a deal worth 0.71% of the budget. OK, it's historic, fine, great. Can you tell me, before I sign up to this, what is in the 99.29%? And the answer the leadership of Plaid gave me was that they couldn't. So they'd signed up to a deal themselves, and they wanted me to sign up to a deal where they didn't know 99.29% of what was in it. So their excuse was, well, Mark, you know, not Drakeford or whoever, the finance minister at the time, it was Mark, but Mark wouldn't tell us. And I'm like, what? That's not my fault, you know. And then Adam Price said, well, if you don't sign up to this, I'm going to resign. And he pulled that one before. You know, he's going to resign as finance spokesperson. I thought, well, do you know what? I'm not falling for it again. I said, Adam, listen, mate, if you want to resign, resign. I don't care. And then Leanne Wood said, oh, you get out the party, get out, why don't you just leave Plaid Cymru? I'm like, wow, leave? All I'm saying is, why sign up to a deal when you don't know 99.29% of it? It's hardly radical. And I remember saying to Leanne then at the time, Leanne Wood was the leader of Plaid Cymru then, if you want to get rid of me, Leanne, I said, you're going to have to expel me. And that's what they did. But for further background, for listeners, my house burgled in January 2016, just before I got elected. Nothing of value was stolen. Money was thrown on the floor. My house was trashed. They did leave my daughter's room alone for some reason. Stuff was taken from my office. I realised that later, after the event, weeks later, months later sometimes, when I've been looking for things, they're not there. Because everything was just trashed. It was a mess. I had my assembly, or it's called the Welsh Parliament now, office burgled in January 2017. The police say it was an information burglary, and they, to break into my office, they went through three doors around to get around the back. They broke through a shed and they cut through steel bars and a PVC plastic window frame to enable them to get access to the office from the back. And what was really wild was, because I'm not the tidiest of people when it comes to putting papers back. Wife goes mad sometimes. And I've been looking at a file, and I sort of put it together. It was tidy enough. I left it on the desk. After the burglary, when I went into the office, everything was just unbelievably tidy. And the file that I'd been looking through, it was just perfect. It was absolutely. It was at a right angle, and almost as if somebody had put the whole file through a copier, and then just placed the contents of the file back on the desk. It was perfect. There was not a piece of paper out of place, and that was quite interesting with that burglary, because the office was more tidy after the burglary. But then it told me that we were doing our job. I've had my staff bullied, intimidated, off on sick leave because of the pressure put on them in the Parliament. So I lost a really great member of staff, great girl. I'm really glad she's got another job now. But she just found working here too much. And one of my staff members was threatened with imprisonment, which was interesting. And that was the former Standards Commissioner, because a lot of complaints were made about me and put into the Standards Commissioner by Plaid Cymru when I was a Plaid Cymru member, Assembly member. The upshot of it was they said I was using my office to promote Plaid Cymru, which was, you're not supposed to act party politically with public funds, and Plaid Cymru said I was acting party politically with public funds and promoting them. Which is really weird. But
so look, you're talking about harassment, bullying really here, and quite extensive of your staff, etc. But we had a very serious incident, didn't we? I believe it was last year with the suicide of one of the senior Labour members.
Yeah, Carl Sargent committed suicide. I think what I find interesting there was they tried to do a job on me. I'll just say they, I won't name who. Certain people try to do a job on me, and they made complaints about me. But the complaints really weren't that serious. So nothing really cut through. And the same people did a job on Carl Sargent, and they made damn sure that the allegations they made about him were going to be serious enough to destroy him. And they not only destroyed his career, they made the man take his own life. And what listeners may be intrigued about, I've been trying to get the files of the investigation into the Carl Sargent affair. Scandal, really, I won't say affair. I've been trying to get all the files connected to the Carl Sargent scandal published. And I put a motion to the business committee to get it on the agenda, because some Labour AMs in public had said that they were going to vote to publish, so therefore they'd have been in a bit of a position if they went back on that. And unbelievably, well, actually very believably, because Plaid Cymru and Labour both have a dirty pair of hands on this between them, two pairs of dirty hands, and Plaid Cymru and Labour voted on the business committee to stop the matter being discussed and put to the vote in the Welsh Parliament. I mean, I pay tribute to my staff, because I'll tell you why my senior advisor was threatened with imprisonment, because he supposedly sent a disputed email, whatever it was, and if you want to identify an email somebody has sent, just go to the server. You just open up the email account on any computer, and there it is. Not a problem. Anyway, he was told that he had to hand over his telephone with all his family photos on and his laptop to the commissioner, and he refused. I supported him in that. Why did he want this? It was pure bullying. And he stuck with it, and then he got a letter off the commissioner, standards commissioner, who'd been investigating me for about 2 years. And I mean that. He went over 2 years. Ultimately, he got a letter saying that unless he consented, they would serve a notice on him, and if he still didn't consent, then he would possibly face imprisonment. And, I mean, that is outrageous. So what I then did was, unbeknown to them, because of what I'd heard on the official recordings of the hearings that I was going to when I was being investigated, they'd said some pretty uncomplimentary things about me, because they thought if they spoke quietly enough when I was out of the room, the microphone wouldn't pick things up, but they were wrong. And I listened to what they said about me, and I decided then to protect myself. And in the public interest, I decided to record them without their knowledge. So I was before a standards commissioner and his staff. And if I was in a hearing at 9, I'd be in at 8 a.m. I'd leave my phone under the table in a bag, and I'd record. And I'd record the break times, I'd record afterwards. And I recorded enough things, and we went public with not all, but some of the stuff in November 2019. And within hours, maybe an hour, the former standards commissioner had resigned. And
over what exactly? What was on those recordings?
I'm not able to say, because the police are currently investigating this. There's a file before the CPS in London, and it's all subject to a police investigation. But what is crazy about this is the commission of the Parliament and the presiding officer made a complaint about me to the police for doing the recordings. It's not an offence to record in those circumstances. And they eventually withdrew the complaint. But the key point is the BBC then had their headline to say that I was being investigated, instead of actually focusing on what had happened with the whole standards process.
Another thing you've been involved with, I notice, is the Hinkley Power Station development. Now, I mean, we've been following this for many years over in Bristol. I think it's fair to say that there is a deep amount of scepticism as to whether this project is ever going to be completed. Certainly, it's unlikely to be delivering it in any way an economic contribution to Britain's energy. You've gotten involved with the dumping of mud over here. Now, first of all, I wonder if you could just explain why it is that the mud has to come over here. I don't understand.
Because we have a Labour government, which is in Wales, which is very weak, which is very stupid, and they have decided to accept mud dug up from outside a nuclear power station, and they decided to allow EDF to dump it a mile outside of the capital city of Wales in the sea. And they allowed 80,000 tonnes to be dumped in 2018. We took them to the High Court. We sort of won the first round, and then we were in a position where we could have been racking up huge costs. I mean, £250,000 a day we were said to be looking at. And so we decided to... We secured a debate in the Parliament then, and we pulled the action, and we walked away. We won the first round. We established that an environmental impact assessment had not been done, for example, which has been really useful now. And but unfortunately, every Labour member of the Welsh Parliament voted to allow the dumping to go ahead. Crazy, really, because what we've since proven is that plutonium has leaked into the estuary for decades. We have a report, NRPB M-173, and that was it was a report that the UK government holds, and there is evidence of test results that the drain pipe from Hinkley has leaked plutonium into the estuary for decades. The key point is that in 2018, they did testing for gamma radiation. Now, gamma radiation is not... it's not plutonium or other nasties. Plutonium emits alpha radiation. So if you test for gamma, you're not testing for plutonium. And what they said was, because there were no spikes of because there were no spikes of gamma radiation, that there was no need to test for plutonium. And what we've uncovered now with the 1990 report, which is not publicly available, but we do have it, thanks to Professor Keith Barnum, what we've proven is that there was a huge spike of plutonium in 1984 being released, with no corresponding gamma spike. So you would not have, if you only tested for gamma, there would be no alarm bells raised, but you would miss the plutonium. So we've already had 80,000 tons of it dumped on us. I'm trying to find out from where it came in the estuary. I hope to God it wasn't anywhere near the waste pipe. We just don't know. Nobody will answer those questions, but we're going to keep on asking. What they want to do now is come back and take up to finish the project, or to enable the project to go to the next stage of building the nuclear power station. They want to dig up 780,000 tonnes of mud from the seabed. And, I mean, bizarrely, the Welsh Government is welcoming that being dumped on Wales. We're not even getting paid for it.
I don't quite understand why they need to get rid of all this mud, because as I understand it, the Severn Estuary is full of mud, and if they take the mud away, within a few years it'll just return.
I think they needed to complete the whatever they're building on that side of the water with Hinkley Point C. They need to dig it up to build whatever they need to build.
So they're going to build something kind of below the sea line, below the shoreline, and they're going to need to remove the mud in order to build something there. Yeah. Do you think that the power station there will ever be up and running?
I hope not. But I don't know. It's a fight. We're not giving up, and we're doing our level best to let people know that this is happening, because no media outlets in Wales has, with the exception of a small blog called Nation.Cymru, they've not reported it. So I actually do a Facebook Live, we have a presentation, thousands of people watch it, we present evidence of the plutonium leaking into the estuary, therefore into the mud that they want to dump on us. BBC are not interested, ITV are not interested, Channel 4 are not interested. It just beggars belief, really.
At the end of this week, there's going to be a lockdown for 2 weeks, actually a bit longer than 2 weeks, through Halloween. How's that going down amongst people around here?
Badly. At the end of this week, we're facing another lockdown in Wales, which has been brought in by the Welsh Government without any idea of how they're going to fund the lockdown in terms of people's employment. We're looking at economic chaos and real hardship, and I'm not seeing any kind of science to tell the public why this needs to happen. I voted for the first lockdown back in March. I didn't think there was a choice then. I've since the new term, September, I've voted against all the local lockdowns in Wales. I'm voting against the lockdown on Friday. I mean, we're in a situation where we have to learn to live with the virus. We have to start behaving differently. We have to carry on with our lives. The virus is there. I don't subscribe to people who say that it doesn't exist. It is there. It can kill anyone, actually, but as we know, predominantly it will kill certain categories of people. So what we need to do is go about our daily business as safely as possible, and a bit differently. But what the Welsh Government is doing is just closing everything down. I mean, me and my wife went out for a meal last Friday, outdoor restaurant, lovely, distance. No chance of catching COVID. I mean, completely safe. They're going to have to close down. People are going to lose jobs. And gyms are closing. There are gyms in the city, all over, really, where you can exercise safely. You know, we're not talking about huge groups of people exercising together. It can be done properly. It can be done safely. We need to maybe bring in COVID A-star certification, maybe, whereby businesses can operate safely. Locking things down, all we're doing is postponing we're kicking the can down the road. We're not listening to the World Health Organization. We should be testing. There should have been mass testing in March. I'm not saying anything new here. There wasn't. The Welsh government did not listen to the World Health Organization.
I mean, we've had an enormous pushback in Manchester against this. Andy Burnham, the mayor, saying, if you're going to have a lockdown, then we need to be compensated, otherwise you're not having a lockdown. Has there been anything similar here in Cardiff?
No. I mean, the Welsh government, can I be polite and say that, I mean, they're just idiots. I mean, they wear a red rosette, people automatically vote Labour in Wales. That is changing. And I think this lockdown now is going to make them realise that they will be held politically accountable, and that's the whole mission of the Welsh Nation Party. We're fed up with these people in there behaving as they like, not listening to the public, making decisions without any accountability. We're going to make them accountable, and I think this lockdown is going to be the turning point in Welsh politics, actually.
Whereabouts can people find the Welsh Nation Party and follow your work, Neil?
www.wnp.wales. And if you go into Facebook, it's Neil J. McEvoy. That's McEvoy. Just follow me on Facebook. And there's plenty of videos. Take a look at what I do. I'm a politician out there every week. I work every day. And I'm privileged to be elected by people. And I do my best. If you're in trouble, you can walk into my office. And we will do our level best to help you. We may not always be successful, but what we will guarantee is that we will try to the best of our ability, and that's what it's all about, really.
Neil McEvoy, thanks very much for joining us.
Diolch yn fawr. Thank you very much.